Bailey? Hey, ready to go? Great. All right, hello everybody. My name is Stephen Sanderson. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team. I'm from England, as you can probably tell. And I've been at Microsoft for about 4 or 5 months or something now, and just kind of just about figured out how it works and what kind of job I've been hired for. And lately, I've been working on this thing called scaffolding, which is what we're going to be talking about today. You might have already seen some of this. Scott Goo delegated to Scott Hanselman to do a bit of a demo of some of this sort of stuff. And Scott Hanselman, if you were in to talk this morning, he might have been doing a bit of scaffolding as well, I believe. So you might be familiar with a bit of this, but what we're going to do in this session is take a much deeper dive into what the possibilities of scaffolding are, and push forwards into like how we can customize it and deal with some more advanced use cases. But we will be starting at the beginning for people who are not familiar with what that's all about. Okay, so I expect you probably know what scaffolding is, although there is some confusion. I genuinely, not joking, 2 days ago got an email from someone asking me for what my prices for scaffolding were, and they wanted it 10 foot wide and 5 foot high. And I'm seriously... So anyway, I don't even know what I'm going to say in reply to that. But so scaffolding is a way of generating some code that you can then customize in order to progress through your development process a little bit faster. So that's good in two main cases. It's going to save you time if you're a beginner, for obvious reasons. It gives you a quicker way of getting up to speed with the framework. It means you don't have to go through the agony of trauma of reading people's books and blogs and such like in order to figure out how... the framework works, means you've got some working code straight away and you can start customizing that. And obviously if you're advanced, you might feel, oh, I don't need that, you know, I know how to do this stuff. Probably a lot of you in this audience would put yourself in that category, but scaffolding is still useful for you because it gives you a way of automating some of your development processes and a way of setting up standard patterns for how things should work within your organization, in your project, sharing those templates about and making sure that everyone else on your team is doing things the way you say, because you know best, obviously. So let me clarify how this fits into the framework. You may have seen that we've got a NuGet package called MVC Scaffolding, which goes into the NuGet console and gives you a way of generating code from the NuGet console, and I'll be talking about that quite a bit today. But the other thing, which is the thing that's new this week, what we released with the MVC 3 tools update, is the ability to do scaffolding from the GUI, from the add new controller dialog. And that's actually where we'll get started. So the console tends to be better for people who are, well, like console-friendly people who like typing, working quickly, got lots of options directly on the command line, bit of a power user thing, also very extensible and customizable what happens in the console. And the GUI, we're mainly targeting it at the more straightforward use cases to enable you to get started a bit more quickly. So I'll talk about both of those and how you can customize and extend both of them. All right, so that's pretty much all I want to do with PowerPoint. So I want to set up like a sort of scenario for a demo project. So does anybody know, as a bit of a clue, where the Olympics are going to be next year? Yay! We're going to have the Olympics in London, which we're all very excited about in England. And now, I can't run, unfortunately, but I felt that I could contribute by creating an MVC application to track what's going on in the Olympics. So we'll keep track of the athletes and the medals that they've won and the records that they've broken and this sort of thing. So I want to build myself an MVC application to do this. And that's the context for exploring a lot of different scenarios with scaffolding and extensibility. So to let you know how we're going to be spending the next 50 minutes or so, I will start by talking about the GUI, which is the simpler end of things. I'll introduce how the command line stuff works, and then I'll show you how we can do other types of scaffolding as well. And from that point on, we'll push forwards into the customization, simply with customizing templates and then doing some funky PowerShell magic to customize more things that happen. And then we'll bring it all back full circle at the end and show how you can take your advanced stuff and use it to enhance what pops up in the GUI. All right, so you'll be delighted to know that's the end of PowerPoint, and we'll be spending the rest of the time in Visual Studio. So let me switch over onto here, my demo machine. And I didn't want that at all. Right, so I've got for myself a new MVC 3 application, which is basically blank, right? I've hardly done anything. It's just the standard home controller, account controller. It's got no views particularly apart from what you get by default. It's got no models apart from account model, which you get by default. So it's kind of a blank slate, but I've created it in advance so I could set the references up and not sort of get it all wrong in the demo. So what I want to do is start adding some domain models to my project so that I can start tracking what's going on with the Olympics. So I'm going to start I'm going to do the GUI scaffolding, which I think a lot of you will have seen because it's been covered in other talks, but I need to do this in order to set the context for what's coming next, but it won't take long. So I'm going to start by making myself a model for the athletes that are involved in the Olympics. And you don't want to watch me type, so I will just drop in my athlete there. So you can see they've got a unique ID. I'm following this naming convention of naming my unique key the name of the model followed by ID, and then we've got some of the properties on that. So that's pretty straightforward. Now I want to scaffold myself a controller for editing, creating, deleting athletes, and so on. So the GUI scaffolding option allows me to go to Add Controller, and then what pops up here is an enhanced version of the dialogue that we had in previous versions, and now I've got these other templates that I can choose. And in case you need clarification, empty controller, the top one and the bottom one, they're the same as what the previous version of the frameworks did. So you either get the empty option or the one with the sort of simple actions that don't really do anything. And then the middle one there, this is the new thing, the interesting one, which does all the data access stuff and creates all the views and stuff for you in one shot. So let's create an athletes controller, athletes, and I'm going to do this with all the data access. I choose my model, athlete, data context, I'll talk about that more in a minute, but let's just say we'll keep the default option there and we'll see that later. Then I will hit add. And so, as you'd expect, it's going to create for me my athlete's controller, and it's going to create for me the data context for doing the data access and a load of views for all the different bits, create, edit, delete, details, all this sort of stuff. And I'll show you that code a bit more in a moment, but let's just build and run it first. Okay, so I jump over to my browser and go to the athlete's controller that I've just created. And when that comes up, which will take a moment because Entity Framework is doing its funky stuff in the background and creating me a database, and it's done it. So now let's put in some athletes. Let's have Usain Bolt, who represents Jamaica. And there we go. So we can insert stuff. We can go to details and so on. And let's put in another one. Let's have, I will be a little bit egotistical, and I'll put myself in, and I can represent Great Britain there. Yeah. All right, so yeah, basic data entry stuff. So let's push this on slightly further, and let's think about doing not just one-to-many, but also a many-to-many scenario as well. So I want to track not just the athletes, but let's say what medals they've won. And I will do that, firstly, by creating a new model class to represent the type of medals that a person can win. So that would be things like gold, silver, bronze, that sort of thing. So it's got a unique key, it's got name, etc., very straightforward. And now I want to map these two together in a many-to-many kind of way. And my linking object there will be a medal award. So a medal award is a thing in its own right because it's associated with an event, and you know there might be other properties to do with the award, like when it was awarded and so on. And now I need to do one-to-many's on both sides of this. So I want medal award to relate to medal type. And I can do that by adding this pair of properties. We always add relation properties in pairs with scaffolding. So we've got the foreign key property, which is the thing that all the views will be dealing with, passing the IDs backwards and forwards. And then we've got the actual model instance here as a property so that we can get access to the sub-properties of it. And the naming convention there means that everything's just going to fit together. Because the thing is named after the model type and we've got this property with ID on the end, scaffolding and entity framework all know how this works, and so that's going to work together. So now I might also want to link my medal award to athlete, and I could put a property called athlete ID on medal award if I want to, and that would work fine. But let's say I don't think that's a very good name because, well, that could mean anything. I want to associate it with the winner of the medal award. So how can I have a property called winner when I don't have a domain model called winner? Well, we use a slightly different naming convention. We use the foreign key metadata attribute like that, which associates this winner property with the winner ID foreign key relation there. And because this is of type athlete, it's all going to work out okay. So again, scaffolding and entity framework will understand how this all works. So I'm going to scaffold myself some controllers for those two. So I'll have a metal types controller, and I'll pick my metal type and let that go. And then I will do the same thing for medal award as well. And okay, so all of that pops up, and do the same thing again. Ooh, wrong thing. Add controller, medal awards controller, and model class medal award, and away we go. All right, so that's doing all this thing. And to be honest, even if you know the framework fairly well. Like, I think I know it reasonably well, but it would probably take me a couple of hours or more to remember how to do all this stuff without scaffolding. You know, I had to get all the many-to-many stuff working and all the views and the edit and stuff all to work out. So it is saving some time, even in the case of someone who reasonably knows what they're doing. So let's just actually see this running now. So I'm going to go back and hit run, and we'll see what happens. And I kind of expect there might be a little bit of a problem. Yes, there's a problem. Okay, so we've changed the data schema, and so it no longer matches what was in the database. So Entity Framework is saying, hey, you know, what are we going to do about this? And if you were in Scott Hanselman's talk this morning, you may have seen that we've got some plans to show ways in which we can migrate your data automatically going forwards. But for now, that's not ready. So what we have to do is give permission to EF to wipe out the database because the schema's changed. So I'm going to do that by jumping into my data context class. You'll see that scaffolding has added properties for all the different types of things that are in this data context. And I'm just going to enable this line that allows EF to drop create database if model changes. And now I've enabled that and I rebuild. Then go back here and hopefully we won't get the error this time. But we will have lost our data because I just gave permission for it to clear the data out. And I'll show you a different way of sort of overcoming this problem in a minute. But right now, let's create a bit more data. So we'll put Usain back in, and we'll put me back in. So here we go, and Great Britain. And now let's set up some medal types. Medal types. There we go. I'll create some of a gold, and I will have a silver. Obviously, you could have a bronze as well, but I won't bother. And then let's go to medal awards. And now I can do the interesting bit of the actual many-to-many, where I can say, okay, we can say for the event, like the 100-meter sprint, the medal type can be gold, and the winner can be Usain Bolt. So the drop-downs here, I've got the it's picked a property to represent each entity, and it's picked the name property by convention, and ignore the fact that it says ID on the end. That was a little issue that we fixed before the final build went out, but I'm not using the final build here, so don't worry about that. You wouldn't have that. So if I hit OK, then you can see it works, and we've got that works, and I will add another one. Maybe I'll have a silver for myself, and I really think that we should have technical presentation as an Olympic event. Which might sound silly, but seriously, poetry was once an Olympic event. You probably don't believe me, but it actually was. Go on Wikipedia. I didn't just put it in before the talk. It's genuinely true. I think it was the German Olympics in like the 20s or something, but yeah, seriously. Anyway, so that works. We got the many-to-many. That's nice. And that pretty much covers everything I want to talk about with the GUI-based scaffolding. So we've looked at that. And let's move on a bit and let's think about what we can do from the command line. Let's look at the code that we've got, actually. Athletes controller. Okay, so it's a standard MVC controller. It's got all the actions that you think, create, edit, so on. Pretty straightforward code. It's the sort of thing you'd write yourself. But actually, there's one part of it that I'm not 100% happy with, and that's the fact that all our data access stuff is kind of in line in the controller. Like, we've got this stuff to do with Entity Framework, and maybe I don't really want that in my controller. Maybe I want to separate the data access stuff out into some other place. Maybe I want to use the repository pattern, which basically just says, let's encapsulate our data access in some sort of standard object that represents a source of data. So in order to do scaffolding with repositories, I need to get the command line version of the scaffolding, which is this package called MVC scaffolding. So I'm going to do that now. I'm going to go to the package manager console, and I will install package MVC scaffolding. This is available now, and here it comes. So once that's installed, that's going to add some more commands into the console that allows us to do scaffolding from there with some additional options as well. Okay, so I could now say scaffold controller, and then I say the name of the thing I want to scaffold, so athlete, and then I'll say I want to do it with a repository this time, so I'll pass the repository parameter. And when I hit OK, that's going to go off and it's going to start doing the scaffolding, so it's created me an athlete repository, but actually it realizes that I've got some of these files already and it doesn't want to overwrite them because that might be important to me and it doesn't want me to lose my work, so I have to explicitly give it permission to overwrite stuff by passing this force parameter. So I'll do that and it will sort of blow everything away and give me a different version of the code and make me keep reloading all the windows. So Let's just close those before that keeps happening. And I want to do the same thing with the other two as well, so I'm going to have a medal award, and I'll do medal type first, not that it makes any difference, and then I'll do medal award as well. And we'll go and have a look at the code that's come out of here now. So if we look at athletes controller now, and actually just sort of multitasking here, I want medal award as well. Award. All right. So the code that's come out of here is much the same as before, except now we've got this repository interface at the top here, and all the data access is done using the this interface. So there's no data access code specific stuff inside my controller anymore. Like you'll see that the F stuff is not in the edit anymore. And if you want to see the actual repository interface itself, well, it's just a pretty simple interface, got methods to get and delete and save and stuff. And out of the box, free of charge, we give you an entity framework implementation of that, which is here. So so we've now got all our data access in one place, and that's kind of cute. And also, let's have a look at, say, medal awards controller. You'll see it's smart enough to understand the relations between items in our domain model. So it knows that medal awards is going to need to access data from all three of these repositories. So it generates the right code for us. And it also does nice things like when it's generating a list of all the medal awards, it does eager loading of all the related things that are going to show up in the grid so that we don't have to do lots and lots of database queries, like one query for every row or something crazy like that. So it was reasonably smart in terms of generating the kind of code that you actually want there. So that's nice. So let's think a bit about what's happening in terms of data access now. So as I've mentioned a number of times, we're using Entity Framework as the data access system here. And the scaffolding that we've got, both the command line and the console, sorry, the command line and the GUI, both support Entity Framework database first, model first, and code first options, so you can use any of those, but the one that scaffolding kind of prefers is code first, because it can just generate that code for you, which is, you know, kind of nice. That's what scaffolding wants to do. But if you've got an existing object context, then you can just use that with scaffolding. That's fine. So where did I get Entity Framework from? I didn't seem to install it, did I? Well, I'll show you that if I do get package, you'll see that in my list of packages, Entity Framework is there in the list. So this is a new default with MVC 3 tools update. When you create your project, we'll put the Entity Framework package in there by default, so it's just ready to go. And if you don't want it, obviously, you can just uninstall that package, but the fact that it's there is going to simplify working with scaffolding, for one thing. Otherwise, we'd have to have extra setup steps, and that wouldn't be very nice. So that's how that's there. And I'll show you how Entity Framework shares an understanding of your domain model with both scaffolding and with ASP.NET MVC itself. So let's say I want to change the way that my data is actually represented. I want to put some metadata on there. I can do that in, I can do it like this, for example. Let's say I want to say that name is required. That's pretty trivial. I just put the required attribute on. So if you've done MVC 2 or later development, you'll know that MVC supports this kind of validation through declarative metadata, and that's nice. But the nicer thing is that both scaffolding and Entity Framework also recognize the same metadata and will set up all the data persistence and the code that we scaffold to match that. So one place to represent your model design. Let's say also I want to have a string length limit on name, and I'll pick an obscure length like 53, just so that you'll remember that number, and when you see it later, you'll realize where it came from. And also, let's say I don't want to call my primary key athlete ID. I don't want to follow this fascist naming convention that Microsoft is imposing. So I'm going to come up with some crazy name of my own, competitor unique ref, like that. And I don't even want it to be an int. I want it to be a GUID because I like them. And now scaffolding doesn't know what you're doing anymore, so we have to give it a little bit of a hint. So I put this key on there, and now it knows that that's supposed to act as primary key. And everything should just work as before, except that I need to update my winner ID to be a GUID as well, because obviously that is the type of that primary key now. All right, so both Entity Framework and scaffolding, and even MVC will all recognize that. So to demonstrate this, I'm going to, because I've not rescaffolded, so I will rescaffold all of this now, so I'll make myself the athlete again, and that's going to go through and produce some slightly different code this time, and I will show you how that code has changed in just a moment. I also need to update medal award as well, because of course that property changed. middle, wrong button. Anyway, so the code that's come out of the scaffolder for Athlete now is much the same, except that you'll see that, say, the parameters are of type GUID now instead of int, because we know that, and let's just get medal award. And if you look in something like the actual repository itself, then you'll see that it's respecting what we've done. So when it tries to deal with primary keys, it knows to use competitor unique ref. It knows that they need to be GUIDs, so that's all respected. And let's run the application, just check that everything's working. Obviously, it's going to blow all my data away now, but I'm going to fix that in just a minute. But hopefully it should still work. That's kind of the first check, yeah. And now if we look at the actual data schema that's come out of there, the thing that Entity Framework has done for us, let's have a look at the tables. So athletes, columns, I'll zoom in a bit. Then you'll see that now the primary key is called competitor unique ref. You'll see that name is not null because it's required, and you see that it's got this maximum length of 53 because we said that in our metadata. And as you also know, ASP.NET MVC will validate based on things like required and string length. So everything's sharing this common understanding now, and that's going to make our life a little bit easier. And all right, so this is all kind of cool, but one thing that's really bugging me and is going to continue to bug me is the fact that we keep losing our data all the time. So since we don't have the migration thing just yet, I'm going to use a different way of maintaining my data, which is seeding the data. So I can define in my data context class that whenever we wipe out the data, I want to stick in a standard set of test data. And if you were doing this on a real project, you would probably come up with a set of test data that kind of exercises all the scenarios in your application, like gold customers and silver customers and people whose accounts have expired and all the things like that, so that when your testers want to run through the application, they've got data in all the different states that they want it to be. So I'm going to create a standard set of test data for myself as well now, and I will do that by creating an initializer class. And I'll just drop this in, and let's try and make it so you can actually read my code. So I've created this class called MyInitializer. It inherits from the previous initialize that we were using, which is the drop create one, and all I've done is overridden its seed method, and at that point I can start creating some standard test data. So I've got my gold, silver, bronze, I've got some athletes, I've got some sample medal awards in there, and you can do things like relations very easily. So you see I'm kind of linking all my entities together a bit, and that's all going to work fine. So now I've got my seeded data, I just want to say, okay, let's actually use that now. So I'll set my initializer to be not the thing that it was before, but my initializer. All right, so I'll build that. And what have I done wrong? Oh, yeah, I need to import a namespace there. And then I'll build that again. And now I need to actually force it to regenerate my database. And so I'll do that in the most kind of brutal way that I can manage, which is just to physically delete the database. So I will tell SQL Server to just throw that away. And next time I run my application now, which is here, then hopefully my test data will appear, and we won't continue to be annoyed by that anymore. So here it comes, hopefully. There we go. All right, so all our test data is there, and now we can sort of continue our development process. That's cool. And what else? Another thing you can do with Entity Framework in the code first option is that you can use its Fluent Configuration API. So let's say I want to change even more the way that my data is mapped into the database. I want to change how the actual data schema in the database is named and so on, independently of my actual .NET code. So I can override So I can override a method called onModelCreating in my data context class, and then I can use this Fluent API where I can say things like the entity called athlete will map to a table or has a key or and so on, and you can go and learn about Entity Framework's Fluent API if you want to know more about that. So you can see I'm saying like the country column will no longer be called country, it will now be called territory of origin in this crazy capitalized way that my DBA insists that I do. And so now I've got that. If I rerun my application, it's going to drop the database, it's going to reseed it with my test data, but this time my database representation will be a little different. So I will have a look at my database now. So you see the table's called people instead of athletes now, and I've got this nasty territory of origin thing in there as well. So I can control how things are represented in my database without actually messing up my lovely MVC code, and that's good. All right. So this is all pretty cool. So what we've done so far is we have, let's bring this back. So we've looked at GUI scaffolding and command line scaffolding, but we've been continuously focusing on this CRUD scenario, data entry. And that's cool, because scaffolding does that really well. But sometimes you might want to scaffold other types of things as well that's got nothing to do with data entry, or CRUD anyway. So let's have a look at how we can scaffold actions and unit tests. This is a pretty new feature. We only put it in a few weeks ago, but people really like it, and I like it as well. So let's say that what we want to do is we want to have a user registration system for this website. The way I would do this if I was doing it manually is, let's say I want to do it on my home controller, I would start typing in some actions, maybe an action for register, which renders a view, which is a form on it, and then my form posts back to another action, and the action takes the data, and it tests if it's valid, and then it does something with that data, and that's fine, that is what I want to do, but I don't want to type it all out by hand, because I'm a busy person who's got TV to watch, so I want to scaffold the action. Action call on the home controller called registration. And what that will do is it's not going to create a new file anywhere, but it's just going to add a new method directly into my existing class, just pops it in. And it's also created a view for that as well. So if you see on home controller, if you can see that, it's quite small, but their registration is there. So we do have the view, and it's not really doing anything because it's got nothing to do, but we can start filling that in. That is kind of nice. That is what I want to do. But actually, I want to have a view model as well that represents the user registration data. So I can pass an extra flag called, create view model. And I want to force it to overwrite the existing view. So this time, the code that comes out will be slightly different. It's now trying to pass a registration view model. And that's something it's just created on the fly for me because I said I wanted one. And that's got no properties on it. But it's kind of automating what I would do, like snippets, but a little bit more powerful and customizable. So now, let's say I want to pass some data to my view. I can just start typing in some property names here if I want to, even though they don't exist. So I will have a username. I'll set that to be blank by default. And I will have also, a premium membership, because people can pay me and they get more information about the athletics. So premium membership equals false by default. And then these properties don't exist, so I can put my cursor on them and press control dot, and then you can't see it. Anyway, it says generate property stub, and so I press enter and it does that, and you see the dotted line goes away. Control dot, generate property stub as well. And now if we look in my view model, you see the properties there, and Visual Studio has figured out what types they should be, so this is cool, fairly fast way of developing. And now I also, let's make a form so that people can put their username into it. I'll go over onto the view that got created, and you'll see it's a strongly typed view for the registration view model. And all I want to do is just have a basic form for that view model. So I can just use the editor form model helper, which will create a field for each of the properties on my view model. Let's run it. And so that's the home controller and an action called registration. There we go. So that'll pop up and probably won't be very attractive, to be honest, because I've not really styled this in any sensible way. But, you know, we're getting started here, so username Steve, submit, and, well, nothing happens because there's no action yet to receive that data. So, of course, I could go and add an action to receive that data and do something with it. I'll just save myself a little bit more time and do it through scaffolding. So I'll pass the post parameter as well, and what will pop out of there now will be another action. This time it'll be one that receives the post data, and it will check whether it's all valid, and then it will, it will re-render the view if it's not valid, or it will. We can put our custom logic in here, basically whatever we want. And I'm not completely certain why I've. Oh yeah, okay. So I've just overwritten my view model and thereby lost these properties. So I'll just re-stub them out. And there we go. So also, just to check this works, let's put a bit of validation rules on here. So I'll just make a username required, like that. And now, hopefully, I'm going to show you a bug right now. But don't worry, this has been fixed in the final build, which I don't have on my machine. So I tried to submit that with a blank. That's not the bug I wasn't. Okay, so I've wiped out my actual view as well. So let me stick that form back in there. Okay. Re-render that. Okay, so now if I try to submit a blank form, I get username is required, and thereby I can put that in and There we go, everything's working fine. So it redirected because it was valid. So this is all cool, that's kind of working. And what if I wanted to have a unit test for this as well? Well, I can scaffold myself the stub for a unit test. I can say scaffold unit test, and for the home controller's registration action, and I'll say what view model that uses. It uses a view model called registration view model. And so let's see what comes out of there. Well, firstly, it's created for me a test class, which is blank, and you saw it before, your very eyes just update, and it's stuck in for me there a test stub, and I can go in and just start putting my assertions in there, define some behavior through my test, see the test fail, go and edit my code, see the test pass, and do the whole test-driven development thing there. So it's just saving me a bit of time typing this stuff out by hand. All right. So that's all I want to talk about in terms of actions and unit tests. But if you're like me, you probably don't like to do things the way that other people do. You like have your own special, quirky habits, and you think, actually, I want my unit test code to look a little bit different from that. Maybe I don't want to use MSTest. I want to use XUnit or MBUnit or something like that. Or maybe you want to customize the way that your repositories look or whatever. So let's look at how you can customize these things. We'll start by customizing some of the T4 templates that are used to generate the code that comes out. So back on Visual Studio there, let's say I want to customize the unit test templates. I can do this with more scaffolding. So I'll say I'll scaffold for myself a custom template, and for the unit test scaffolder, the test class. And if you want to know more details about all the different things you can customize, you can find a recent blog post of mine went into this, so that's a good source of information. And I'll also have one for test method. So what has this actually done right now? Well, initially, it seems to have sort of crashed or something, which is not exactly what I had in mind. And that's great. Yeah. All right. That's really not what I had in mind. Go on. Die. Die, Devenv. Die. I did tell you that this is not the final build, didn't I? The final build is available right now to you. You can go and get the final MVC 301. You can get the MVC scaffolding newer than this. So hopefully you're not going to have this problem. And then I'll bring up my application, and we will continue as if that didn't happen. And we'll edit out of the video so that it doesn't get back to my boss. And I don't. Okay. So what did we actually do? We created... So these files went on disk, and they've not been linked into the project because Visual Studio crashed, so I'm going to have to manually include them in my project. You wouldn't have to do that. And so by doing the scaffolding these custom templates, what it's done is it's added this code templates folder, and inside there it's added these T4 templates that we can edit to change the type of code that comes out. And the templates can be pretty simple, like this. Let's make that a bit bigger. Okay, so this is the template for an empty unit test fixture. I can go in, I can just start changing this. I can change all the syntax to look like NUnit instead of MSTest if I want to use that. And the T4 template that generates the actual methods themselves is a little bit more complex because it's got this sort of chained if-else thing, which uses... So you can see we can use arbitrary C# code or VB code in the templates if we want to. And the logic that we've got in here by default is if your method returns a view result, we'll produce this test stub. If it returns a redirect result, we'll do this other thing that relates to redirects and so on. So you could come in and start doing stuff related to your custom action results and so on. But all I want to do really here is just demonstrate that this actually does respect your changes and does make a difference. So all I'm going to do in a completely overbearing and unnecessary way is say to everyone on my team, whenever you create a test method, I insist that you need to put a little comment block at the top of it that explains what the point of your test method is. So I'm going to define that by putting this block here in my template and just show you I can evaluate arbitrary C# things there. And then I expect people to kind of fill this out whenever they create a test method. So just to see that actually working, I will scaffold for myself I'm going to use something slightly different. I'm going to do action with unit test with all this long crazy name. I'll explain that more in a minute. And so for home controller, something else, why not? So what's going to come out of there now is going to be both an action method and a unit test for it. It's not going to overwrite my home controller test. It knows that already exists, so it's skipping that. But it's inserting this extra something else test, and you can see it's put my completely pointless comment block at the top of that now, so people would know to go in and type some stuff in there. So that just shows you that we can override the templates, and you can do that for repositories, for controllers, whatever, whatever you like. So that's nice. We can go and we can customize the templates. But that's just the beginning of customization. Because what if we want to customize with some more complex logic, maybe generate multiple files that interrelate with one another, and maybe have some other logic about what type of parameters are accepted by the scaffolder and what's done with that? Well, we can do all of this by writing some PowerShell code of our own. So let's have a look at how we can do that. So to set up the scenario here, I want to have RSS feeds in my application. I want to have lots of them. So I want to have so many, in fact, that I want to have a standard format for how RSS feeds should be defined. So I'm going to create a custom scaffolder for that. So I'm saying custom scaffolder, but like, what is a scaffolder, actually? I keep using the word, but I've not told you what it is. Is it a .NET method? Is it an assembly? Is it something in a database? Well, okay, let's try and explain what scaffolders actually are, like conceptually and physically. So I can start by saying get scaffolder. And what that's going to do is it's going to give me a list of all the scaffolders that are available. So some things that I've used, like controller and action unit test. And you can see that these all live in these packages. But the curious thing here is that they've got these crazy long names. And I didn't say action unit test, I just said unit test. And if I wanted a view, I would say ASPX view or Razor view. Not really, I don't want to do that. I want to just say view, and you know, I want to have some system of saying like what kind of things I want by default. So we've got this other concept, as well as just a list of scaffolders. We've got this concept of default scaffolders. And this, all this is a way of giving a short name that maps onto an actual scaffolder. So right now, if I say I want a view, that's going to map onto Razor view. And I could change that if I wanted, but I like the Razor views right now. And if I want to have a unit test, that's going to map onto this long-looking thing here. And the point of this is not just to save you the time of typing, but because scaffolders refer to each other internally. So when the controller scaffolder wants to generate a view, it doesn't know whether you want a Razor view or an ASPX view. But it doesn't have to, that's fine, because it just says scaffold view. And then whatever is defined as being your standard view is what's going to pop out of there. And so this is an aspect of the extensibility model. If you wanted to completely change how views work, then you could create your own view scaffolder and set that as being the default. And you know, if you wanted to implement like a Spark view scaffolder or something like that. Okay, so that gives you a bit more of a clue about what they are, but I still haven't sort of shown you what they're made of. So in order to actually see that, I'm going to create a new actual scaffolder of my own. And I can do that by saying the way to actually create a scaffolder is using a scaffolder that generates scaffolders. So it's all this sort of like inception kind of thing. So let's have a custom scaffolder. And because I want to be generating these RSS feeds, well, I'll call it that. Not very creative, but you know, that does the trick. And that's going to pop out some files there. Let's see what it's actually got for us. That's created for me a folder called RSS feed, and we've got a PowerShell file in there, and we've got a T4 template. So this is what the scaffolder actually is. It's PowerShell plus templates. And let's just run this right now before we even look at the code. So the fact that that's now there means that I can say RSS feed, and you see it appears in the tab completion list, which is nice. And I run that, and what pops out there is something called example output. And example output just kind of gives you a starting point for building a scaffolder because, you know, it's a scaffolded scaffolder, so you've got a starting point there. And it's just a simple C# class. And that comes from this T4 template, which looks like a C# class, except for it's got these placeholders in. And then the data for that comes from this PowerShell file. And this is where some of you freak out because you've never seen PowerShell before and you don't know what all this stuff is. But don't worry, it's not important whether or not you understand the details of PowerShell. You can go and learn that on your own weekends. And for now, you can just trust me that this is not that complicated. For those of you who have used PowerShell, you see that actually what we've done here is very trivial, because all I've done is I've called a single commandlet called addProjectItem. And what this does is it takes the name of a template that we want to render, and it takes an output path wherein our project we want to put that output. It takes a load of data that we want to pass to the template, and it takes a few other parameters that sort of define how it interacts with the console, but we won't worry about that. So that is how we produce the example output, and that's fine. Okay, so now I want to customize this by putting in my own PowerShell logic and my own templates that's going to generate some RSS feed code. I need to have an idea of what the end point is here. So what I did is I created a separate project and I put an RSS feed in there so we knew what the code was like that we wanted to produce. So here is my other project called blog, pretty obvious thing that would have an RSS feed. And the way I've implemented my feed is I've got an action method called feed, and that gets a list of all the things that we want to render into our template, and it just passes all that to a view. So I don't know if any of you have generated RSS from ASP.NET MVC before. I have. The way I've done it in the past is I've usually used something like the X document API, or linked to XML, to generate an XML document that represents the RSS data and then serialize all that down to the client. Now, obviously, you can do that, but now we've got Razor, and if you want to generate anything with angle brackets in, Razor's a really good way of doing that. And I think it's actually even more elegant than doing link to XML. So if I want to produce some RSS data, then I can just have a view that looks like RSS. And if you've not seen RSS before, well, it's like this, really. It's got an XML doc type, got RSS element, channel and items. Each channel has got multiple items, and then each item has got a title, it's got a link, and this is what your RSS reader displays. And one thing that some of you may not have known about before is this content encoded thing. This is a standard supported by almost any reasonably recent RSS reader, and this is a way of embedding an arbitrary chunk of HTML inside the actual item. So if you want your entire full text of your blog post to be in the RSS reader, you would use content encoded, and then you can put your arbitrary data in there, and that's what gets displayed. And in my case, the way I want to generate that arbitrary HTML is by rendering a partial, because obviously MVC is good at doing that sort of thing. So I'm going to say render partial for the feed item content, and in here I put the HTML markup that I want to represent my item. So I think this is a pretty elegant way of doing RSS, because the thing I like about it is that it's really like raw and low level. And if somebody wants to come along and change the actual markup, well, like obviously you just come and edit stuff in the actual view. It's really straightforward as compared to learning some sort of third-party API for generating RSS. So I like this, and this is the way that I want to scaffold my feed in my MVC application. So you know what the end goal is now. I want to make this come out of my scaffolder. So let's get rid of all this code that's already there and sort of start at the beginning. Now, if you don't know PowerShell, you might not keep up with this next session. That's absolutely fine. You're not expected to understand every single line of code. It's not important. What is important is that you get a vague sense of sort of the possibilities, and then you can go off and read more about this if you want to do it. I've got a blog series that I just completed last week, which has got like a 7-part guide to doing scaffolders, and it's got lots of information about creating custom scaffolders, all the commandlets that you can use, and examples, like an example of an Ajax scaffolder and things like that. So you can learn about all of this. You don't have to follow every bit of it now, but you will get an idea of how that works. So the first thing I want to do is put some extra custom parameters on my scaffolder, and I want to know what type of model we're generating a feed for, and I want to know what controller we want to put the action that generates the feed into. So let's grab some snippet here that will give me these parameters. So this is PowerShell's way of declaring new parameters, and I've just said that there's going to be a model type and a controller name, and I've also declared that model type is mandatory, although controller name is not, because we can probably infer the controller name from the model type in most cases. So now I've got that. If I tried to run scaffold RSS feed again, now remember this worked before, if I run it now, it won't work because it will say, no, there's a missing parameter model type. So that's nice, it's respecting that. And now if I say I'll scaffold an RSS feed for fake model, now it's going to work because I provided value, but that's not very good because I don't want it to accept fake models. I want to check that the model that's been passed in is really valid. So here's some code that does that. Well, it does more than that. So the first two lines, what they're going to do is they're going to get this type, model type. They're going to find that in my project. And if it's not there, well, this commandlet will throw an error, and then we'll just abort the whole thing by kind of returning early. And then if it is valid, we're going to say, if you've not given us the controller name, then we're going to infer it by pluralizing the name of your model. So if it's like a person, we'll pluralize that and look for people controller, and we'll, you know, check that that's there as a controller as well. So now if I try to do fake model, it will not work this time. It will say, no, there's nothing that matches fake model. So I would have to put in something that actually exists, like athlete, and this time it will not give me an error, but it's not doing anything because, you know, my code is not telling it to do anything more. So what I want to do is to add a new feed action into the controller that we've been told to add the feed action to. And my PowerShell code for that is this scary-looking block, which is not that scary, actually. It's just that the font's massive. And if you look at this, all I've really done is I've invoked a commandlet called addClassMember via template. And what that does is it renders a T4 template, and it takes the name of the template, and it is going to take the name of a class to put the output into, and then it will inject the output from that template as a new member in the class. So I'm going to add a new feed action there, and I'm passing some data that I want, like the model type and so on. So if I try to run that now, this time it's going to give me an error, because it will be saying, hey, you told me to render a template called feed action, and there isn't one. So okay, let's fix that by making a feed action template. So I'm just going to rename this one that we've already got, and what's it supposed to be called again? Feed action. And I'm going to drop in my pre-prepared code for feed action template, which is not very difficult to understand. It just looks like an MVC action method, except that it's got these placeholders for emitting the data that's come from my PowerShell file. And so let's try running that. Let's actually just go to, where is it? Let's go to Athletes Controller so we can see the feed action actually appear before our very eyes and be astounded and delighted when it does. So Scaffold RSS Feed Athlete, it's now going to render my template, and then the output appears as a new member in my class. So that was nice. But of course, if I try to run it now, it's going to fail because it'll say, there's no view for this, I'm sorry. So I'm going to have to create myself the view, and you know what the views are supposed to look like. They're supposed to look like this, feed CSHTML and feed item content. So let's add some more scaffolding logic to generate that. And this is quite simple because I can use the existing view scaffolder. I just give it the name of the controller I want to put the view for. Say I want to render a template called feed view, and I'll pass it the model type and other stuff, and also similarly I want to render a view for the feed content item partial, and that's a template called feed item content partial, confusingly, and so I need to add some T4 templates for those things as well, and I'm going to do that by just copying and pasting the existing things and renaming them. So what's that first one called again? Feed view, and the second one is called feed item content partial. It's very elegant. Feed item content partial. And I'm going to just drop in my pre-prepared stuff there for that as well, which is not too scary. It's just the XML thing again, except for I've now got the placeholders in there. And also for the actual content item, this one's slightly more interesting because what I'm doing here, I'm using the Visual Studio Code Model API to iterate over all the properties on my model. And for each of the properties, I'm going to generate a bit of HTML that describes this property. Okay? Yeah? I missed, sorry? Did I do that? That was bad. Thank you for letting me know. Okay, so let's undo that, and then I will put that into the feed view one, which is where I was supposed to go. Thank you for that. And now I will actually run that. That would have been so baffling if I hadn't known. So, yeah, run that again. And will that work, or will I have forgotten something else? We'll see. Okay, so it seems to be working. It's added my my feed view there. And so if I look at my views for the athletes controller, you'll see I've now got this feed, and feed references this partial called feed item content. And as I showed you, it iterates over all the properties and produces some HTML that represents the full view. So now if I build that, hopefully I can actually go and bring up the output from that now. So if I go to athletes/feed, which is the name of the action, then hopefully we'll get the RSS data from our database. And here it comes. All right, so that works. That's nice. And, of course, this is just scaffolding. It's not supposed to be final code. So someone could come and look at this and go, hey, I don't really think that's entirely user-friendly, to be honest, having the athlete and then a GUID for the item title. So I will go into my view, and I will change that. And very trivially, I'll just say, replace that with model.name. No, what's it not called model? Is it? It's called item, which is the thing, the iteration variable, item.name. I've got IntelliSense under that. It's all strongly typed. That's nice. And hopefully this time, if I reload that, then I've got the actual name. So that's great. So it's quite easy for anybody who wants to add an RSS feed for any given model type to come along and do that, and then go and just edit the code to define exactly the sort of fine-tuned details of how it should be represented, including editing the actual full HTML blob that comes out of there. All right, that's kind of nice. So what we've just achieved is we've created an entirely new scaffolder. And as I said, I know you won't have understood every line of the PowerShell, particularly if you're not familiar with PowerShell, but there's you know, lots of resources and documentation out there. Start with my blog, and you will see the like 7-part series about how to do that. You'll be fine with that. So let's kind of spin this all back to the beginning now and say, we've created our custom scaffolder, and we like it, and we want to share it with other people on our team so that they all start using it. So the first way we can share it with people, very trivially, is just to commit this folder into source control. And then the fact that that's in the project means that when everyone else gets it, they've got the RSS feed scaffolder as well. That's nice. But what if we want to actually have it in the GUI as well? So if I go to add controller right now, you'll see that what we've got here, we've got the three things we had before, but also, interestingly, we've got two other things. We've got these things from MVC scaffolding now as well. So MVC scaffolding has put in its own controller scaffolder, including the one that deals with repositories. So that shows you that this thing is extensible. And one of our design principles with MVC tooling is that whenever there's a drop-down list, there's some way for you to get into it. You can extend it and put your custom thing in there. And this is obviously not an exception. So I want to put my RSS feed scaffolder into this drop-down. How do I do that? Well, it's really easy, because all I have to do is go to the metadata that declares that this PowerShell file is a scaffolder and just change it. So instead of being just a regular scaffolder, it's a controller scaffolder, which is a subclass of normal scaffolder. And just by having made that change without anything else, if I now go to add controller, then we've kind of broken something. I don't know what. I really should have put the final build on this. So I'm just going to kill this and bring it back up in a second. Okay, here we go. Olympics. So we will see our item appearing there. Oh, no, sorry, that wasn't a bug at all. That was me having screwed something up. So the controller scaffolder constructor requires us to pass a parameter that is the text that's going to appear in the GUI. So I'm going to say controller with RSS feed. And now I've got that. If I go to add controller, then what we get in our drop-down list, now we've got controller with RSS feed. Okay, great. So now all the people on my team can know that that's there and they would know to use it. All right, so just to sort of finish this off, let's say I want to scaffold something for a new model type. I want to keep track of when people have broken world records and have an RSS feed for that and hopefully achieve all of that in about 30 seconds. So I'm going to create a model for world records. And I'll just drop this in here at the top. And you can see that we're using the normal conventions to link that as a one-to-many to athletes. And now I've got that, I can say, give me a controller for this. And more so, I'll have a controller with an RSS feed, please. So let's say I have a controller with RSS feed. Oh, it's not letting me choose a model class for world record. So, okay, I can go back to my PowerShell file, and I can put in a bit more metadata that you can learn about online. So supports model type equals true. And now I've got that. If I go to add controller again, then this time when I choose RSS feed, this time I'm allowed to choose a model type. So I'll have world record. And if I hit that, actually, it's not completely going to work right now because it's looking for a controller class that doesn't exist. Because our PowerShell logic here assumes that the controller does exist. But if it doesn't, let's modify it so that the scaffolder is smart enough to create the controller if it doesn't exist. So I'll get rid of that line here. And what I'm doing now is I'm saying, yeah, we'll go looking for the controller. If it's not there, we'll just sort of silently continue. And then because it's not there, we'll scaffold a new controller using scaffold controller. And then we'll use that one. All right. So now we've got, hopefully, a final working version of our custom scaffolder. Add controller. I'll call it world records controller. Controller with RSS feed, and the model type will be world record. So let's say go. And hopefully what this is going to do now is it's going to go, okay, there's no existing world records controller, so I'm going to create that using the scaffold controller. And then because this is the controller with RSS feed, it's going to stick all the relevant stuff for an RSS feed in there. And it looks like it's done it because you can see that stuff at the bottom. And so let's actually try running this, see if it works. So hopefully now I can go to the world records controller and I'll enter a bit of data and then we'll see that we've got that in an RSS feed. So here it comes. All right, so I'll create a new world record for the well-known 400 meter moonwalk event, which was won in 33 seconds by Usain Bolt, I think. So create that. Okay, that's good. And now go to the feed, which we scaffolded into it, and you can see that we've got the RSS feed for that. So that was really easy, and anyone on my team could have done that in just a couple of seconds, and then they can go and start, you know, customizing the actual RSS format of data that comes out of that, and that's you know, a pretty nice and straightforward way of working. So that's all the demo that I'm going to have time for. So we've been right through from where this starts in the GUI through to the command line, through how you can customize it, and finished by how we can put our customized stuff back into the GUI. So I think that's everything, yeah? So I reckon I've got a few minutes. If there's any questions, then run to a microphone and shout your question out. Any questions? No? No questions? Oh, yeah, there's one question.
When you were modifying the MVC scaffolder to do customizing, it seemed like you were making heavy use of the T4 scaffolder.
I'm sorry, could you
repeat? You were making heavy use of the T4 scaffolder project. That's actually dependent on Entity Framework. What would you use if you wanted to do something else?
If you wanted what, sorry?
If you wanted to not use Entity Framework in your scaffolding.
Okay, good question. Yeah, so the package that underlies MVC scaffolding is T4 scaffolding, and that allows you to do scaffolding for other technologies like web forms and so on. And that takes a dependency on Entity Framework because it deals with data access stuff internally. If you don't want to use Entity Framework, well, you can just unreference it after you've added it if you want to, and then just sort of carry on regardless. So you can create your scaffolders for Nhibernate or Mongo, whatever it is that you want to. But yeah, we do have to take a dependence on Entity Framework, because otherwise the common use case of Entity Framework would not work out of the box. So that's why we've done it that way. But you can just remove the reference if you don't want it.
Okay.
Another question.
So your custom ones were in the project. Is there a way to get them more globally, like item templates, project templates kind of approach?
Okay. Yeah, great. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, what if I don't want to have my custom scaffolders actually inline in my project themselves? Well, the other way of packaging your scaffolders is with a package, with a NuGet package. So if you were to create a NuGet package that contains those scaffolder files in its tools folder, then just by installing that package, that would become available in your project as well. So what we're really hoping is that people in the community will get enthusiastic about this, and they'll go off and create their scaffolding packages for other data access technologies or other unit testing frameworks, publish those packages to NuGet, and other people will be able to get them. And of course, just within your company, you can create your own packages and share those about if that's the way you want to do it. Okay. Let's take a question. There's a question over here.
Hi. Is the scaffolder only support on the C#? Is it support other language as well?
Very good. I'm glad F-sharp. You asked that, because I should have mentioned it. So is this just for C#, or what about VB developers? Yes, it completely supports VB. So if you are doing scaffolding within a VB project, the code that comes out is VB. So we've got all the templates have got C# and VB versions, and it will pick the right one depending on what your project type is. And if you create a custom scaffolder, then you can create a template for both languages if you want to, or you can create a template just for one language, and that's what it'll use.
Thanks.
Okay. Last question then.
Yeah, kind of similar question, but you mapped default scaffolding, like view maps to Razor view, something maps to something else. Default scaffolding. Yeah.
Okay.
So is that per project, or is that per environment setting?
So I set up at one point, I showed you how there's both ASPX view scaffolder and there's Razor view scaffolder, and I set that, well, by default, Razor is the default, and when you change that default, is that per project, per solution, per computer, per IP address block, or something mad? So good question. The answer is it's on a per solution basis by default, but when you call, let me just show you, when you call set, if you want to change your default scaffolder, you say set default scaffolder, so I say view, and then I'll say MVC scaffolding.aspx view. So by default, that's going to set it for my entire solution. But if I want to, no, sorry, by default, that's going to set it on a per project basis. But if I want to, I can pass this solution wide flag, and that will then apply as a default for all of the projects in my solution. And whenever you're scaffolding, it will look for a default for your project, and if there isn't one there, it will go up to the solution level. Okay, I think that's the last question, so thank you very much for attending. Please fill out your feedback forms. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good rest of the day.